Chapter 3. The egg is ready to hatch. Like, right now. My mind raced with the possibilities of all we could do with a wind dragon at our disposal. I'd seen the pure chaos and destruction a full-sized version of the creature had caused. The damn thing fought 8 fire dragons at the same time and didn't seem to so much as break a sweat. Sure, the dragon that emerged from the crystal egg would only be an infant, but he would grow to his full potential in time.
"What makes you say that?"
Awara asked, with a hint of skepticism in her tone.
"It's only been in our possession for a few weeks."
"It has,"
Kandara agreed.
"And that whole time, we haven't heard a single sound or seen any signs of movement on the inside. Until now."
"Is the little fella trying to break his way out?" I grinned with glee.
"Not quite."
The golden-haired butterfly woman frowned.
"The egg has begun to rock back and forth, and I can clearly see the shadow of its inhabitant just beneath the surface. However, the dragon hasn't made any progress as far as trying to break out through the shell."
"Could we just break him out?"
Lazan suggested, with a sharp grin.
"I think one of our stone axes could smash the shell right in two, given enough force."
"That would be very dangerous,"
Kandara scoffed.
"You could accidentally hurt the dragon with the pure, blunt force of your swing. Then there's the simple fact you might crack the egg open prematurely, which could cause all sorts of health problems with the creature inside. Let's also not forget that if you were to somehow crack open the egg, the wind dragon inside might view you as an enemy and then come out with aggressive force. If that happens, it'll be difficult to bond with the little thing, which is absolutely the last thing we need right now."
"We're not smashing it open. I can't really think of any situation in which using brute force on an egg leads to a desirable outcome."
"What if they are the eggs of your enemy?"
Trin suggested.
"Exactly,"
Lazan added.
"What happens if we come across the nest of a dragon that's already controlled by the orcs? Smashing their eggs would solve a whole lot of problems in that case."
"Not really," I reminded the 2 Kunag women. "If they're just eggs, then they have no allegiance yet. It would be wise to spare them. This way, we could bond them with a bunch of our friends and then have a literal army of dragons on our hands."
"See?"
Trin slapped Lazan on the shoulder.
"This is why Ben is our leader. I would have smashed them all without a second thought."
"Well, there won't be any egg smashing anytime soon,"
Kandara reminded the 2 raccoon women.
"Hopefully, ever."
"So, what do we do then?" I implored our resident zoologist. "Do we just need to sit back and wait it out until the dragon decides to come out?"
"I think he wants to come out now,"
the green winged woman sighed.
"He's even making pathetic noises every now and again. It's like he's trapped inside there."
"See?"
Lazan proclaimed.
"We need to smash up the egg and get him out of there."
"No egg smashing," I rolled my eyes. "Kandara, is there any way you know of to try and speed along the process?"
"We could incubate it,"
Ainsley spoke up with a shrug.
"Isn't that what you said the clucker birds are doing when they sit on their eggs?"
"It is," I nodded. "They're trying to keep it warm so the fetus inside has ideal conditions to develop. Do you think that's what's going on with the wind dragon egg?"
"I don't know where these beasts come from, but I know it's nowhere around here. Surely our island doesn't offer the conditions necessary for the eggs to hatch, and it's not like we even have any wind dragons to incubate the egg, if that's even how they do it."
"Why couldn't we just have one of our dragons try to incubate it?"
Gemma suggested.
"I'm sure Nixie would be willing to sit on the egg for a few days since she's already hatched a couple of her own."
"That's not how it works,"
Kandara shook her head.
"The internal makeup of a water dragon isn't the same as a wind dragon. Their body temperatures will be different, as are their skin and internal organs. I doubt having Nixie or George incubate the egg will do anything other than set us back a few days."
"Could Tyrion help speed the process along?"
Gemma offered.
"I could ask him to use his fire breath on the egg."
"I like your thinking,"
the airy Morpho admitted.
"But no. How would that even work? If Tyrion got even the slightest bit too close, his fire breath would roast the baby wind dragon alive. Even if he was able to find a distance that would be appropriate, would he be able to continuously use his fire breath for days on end?"
"Probably not,"
Gemma frowned. "Then we don't really have any options, do we? We have to find a place where wild wind dragons lay their eggs."
"Where in Kaku's name would we find that?"
Awara asked.
The sea is vast and the number of islands is infinite.
That's why I'm hoping the animal expert here can point us in the right direction, I noted as I glanced over at Kendara. Do you have any ideas as to where a wind dragon might set up their nest?
Not exactly.
The beautiful butterfly woman sighed.
Though I bet I could make an educated guess based on what we know from the other dragons.
Okay, I nodded. That's a start. What are your ideas?
In my experience, the fire dragons seem to lay their eggs in areas that are the opposite of their internal temperatures. Their bodies are made up of dry heat, so they tend to look for wet, cold areas to nest.
Like our island,
Trin interjected.
Tyrion's mother had her nest on the beach, where it was obviously very cold and wet.
From what you've told me, Ben, it sounds like the water dragons operate in the same way. Nixie and George nested up in the mountains, correct? Where it was dry?
That's exactly what they did. Those mountains are the one place on this island where it's not humid all the damn time.
I would imagine the wind dragons would behave the same way, then.
Kandara smiled.
So, let's see. Their internal composition would be cold, for sure, which means they would be obsessed with finding a place that was both arid and wet.
So do you think they'd be up in the mountains, like George and Nixie? I pondered aloud.
A water dragon's composition would lead them to find a dry spot.
The Morpho shook her head.
By definition, wind is a dry element. That would mean the mountains would be too arid for these creatures' eggs.
That's when it hit me. When Kandara talked about the internal temperatures of the different dragons, she was talking about humoral theory. Sure, it was a very, very primitive theory about medicine and biology, but at least I could now grasp onto the concept ever so slightly. So you're saying a wind dragon is dry and cold, which means they'd want to lay their eggs in a place wet and hot?
Why couldn't that be here?
Awara suggested.
This place is very wet and very warm.
I don't know about you guys, but I haven't seen any wind dragons coming around here, nor have the dragonkin. It'd be hard to miss a giant creature like that.
They wouldn't want to lay their eggs in a populated area anyway. You said the orcs frequented this island, right?
Yeah, they were terrorizing these poor women for years before I got here.
Then this island has too much action for it to have nests.
The green winged butterfly woman mused. Though I still felt a little clueless, at least I felt like we were narrowing things down. We needed to find an island with a wet, hot climate that was secluded, most likely out of the reach of the orcs' influence. Ainsley, I turned to the blue-eyed beauty of a Nirlope. Could you do me a favor? Go and tell Isla I want to see the map of the islands. And if you run into Mira, send her this way too, okay?
I'll find them.
Ainsley nodded. The pregnant Nirlope woman stood from her chair, and for a brief second, I wondered if the action was going to accidentally cause her to pop. Ainsley's face scrunched up as she leaned back, pressed her hand against the base of her spine, and tried to crack her back. Then she turned to walk away, but Trin's voice stopped her in her place.
Try to find Malak as well,
Trin added.
She is the wisest of the Kunag people, so she would be a great help in trying to figure out where you need to go. I'll let her know as well.
Ainsley agreed.
Now let's see how far these legs of mine will carry this boulder of a belly.
The strawberry blonde Nirlope chuckled to herself as she waddled across the courtyard. Maybe I should have asked somebody else, I mused, as I watched the pregnant woman wander.
It's all right, Ben,
Gemma reassured me with a swipe of her hand.
Ainsley is always talking about how she needs her exercise, and how it's hard to come by for a woman as far along as she is. If anything, you did her a favor.
I hope you're right.
Do you mind if I ask you a question, Draco Rex?
Awara interjected in a tone that meant business. Shoot, I nodded. Though I knew she was probably about to say something I wasn't a fan of.
Not to question your decision-making process,
the orange-haired pixie prefaced.
But why are we putting so much emphasis on getting this egg hatched? Shouldn't we be focusing our energy on finding and rebonding with the dragons that escaped from the volcano?
She wasn't wrong. It was priority number one to find the fire dragons that had flown off when the rebonding ceremony went south. All eight of them were out there somewhere, just waiting for somebody to come along and attempt to bond with them again. Hopefully, that'd be me and my crew, and not the orcs. However, I had no freaking clue where any of them went. Sure, the women who bore my children had partially bonded with the beasts and could sense their presences internally, but that was only when they were close by. To find those fire-breathing dragons, we'd have to scour the seven seas and pray to every god and goddess we knew that we just so happened to come across one of these things. With the wind dragon egg, things at least felt more straightforward. All we needed to do was figure out an island with the appropriate climate and then go scope it out. If it was one of the less populated islands, then we probably wouldn't have to worry about orcs getting in our way, which would make it an even simpler adventure. We'll find those dragons, I promised the butterfly woman. Trust me, you all will get to be bonded with the magnificent fire-breathing beasts in due time. However, we have the opportunity to hatch a wind dragon right now. If we can get this egg hatched and have the creature inside bond with one of us, then we'll have six dragons at our sides. Plus, I already know what we needed to do for this mission, and I feel like anything we try to do to find the fire dragons is just gonna be a crapshoot. The devil, you know, and all that.
I suppose.
Awara shrugged.
Just as long as you promise to fulfill your end of the bargain.
Don't worry, I reassured the beautiful butterfly woman. The dragons are still rightfully yours to bond with when the chances come up. It's just, right now, I want to focus on growing our resources. And the best way to do that is to hatch this egg. Besides, think about how much help it would be to have a wind dragon at our sides when we're hunting for the lost dragons. I know it'll be a baby for a while after it hatches, but you saw how easily a full-grown wind dragon was able to fight off the fire breathers, right?
I remember.
Awara reminisced.
It probably would have killed at least one of them if we hadn't come along and killed it.
Exactly. So how great do you think it'll be to have that sort of power at our disposal? Sure, we could wait and go for the fire dragons first, but it's always better to be prepared. There is a reason Batman is always able to beat Superman, even though he should theoretically be clobbered every single time.
Batman?
The orange-haired beauty raised an eyebrow.
Is that what we're calling the creature we fought on the island now?
No, it's a famous character from my world. Maybe someday I'd come across a person with even the slightest grasp of Earth's pop culture, who would understand what I was talking about when I made my jokes. But it definitely wasn't going to be today.
Oh, it's all right, Awara.
Gemma reassured the butterfly woman.
I didn't understand most of Ben's jokes at first either. Thankfully, we have Eric and Marella around to translate for us.
Seriously, what would you guys do if I didn't use my favorite Earth stories for their bedtime tales? Since I didn't quite have a firm grasp on the Dragonkin language yet, and couldn't read the traditional stories that had been written on their scrolls, I deferred back to the stories I knew from my world when it was time to put my kids to bed. So, my children didn't know much about the legendary Dragonkin heroes like Naro the Great or Pela the Wise, but they sure as hell knew that with great power comes great responsibility, and that it's not who you are underneath but what you do that defines you. Just then, the doors over by the kitchen area flew open, and out came a small army of Dragonkin servers. In their hands they carried small white platters covered with a dome made out of shaped bone. The servers spread out, walked over to the various tables, and placed the platters down on top of them ever so gracefully. Then they gave a small bow before they grabbed onto the handle at the top of the platter and lifted up the cover. Instantly, my nose was assaulted with the scent of delicious roasted pork, and the meat on the plate looked like it was intentionally burnt on both ends and then cut up into bite-sized chunks. Between the two burnt sides, the meat was a perfect white color, and the whole thing seemed to have been slathered in a dark brown sauce peppered with spices.
Wow!
Awara's jaw nearly hit the table.
This is how you eat normally?
Not normally, just whenever we have a big celebration feast.
Hallie's cooking is a blessing from Nira,
Gemma explained.
I've never had anything like it before my people came back to this island with Ben.
That's not saying much.
Lazan snickered.
Didn't your people not eat meat before you met Ben?
We had been taught by our goddess that any form of violence or killing was wrong, even if it was for a greater good. Thankfully, Ben taught us the error of our ways. If not, we would have all been wiped out by the orcs and their hideous wargs.
See?
Lazan motioned to the Nerelope woman.
That's a good compliment to Ali's cooking. But it doesn't mean very much coming from a bunch of people who only know how meat tastes, thanks to Ali's cooking. Now, if I told you we Kunag people love it just as much, well, that should tell you something. It is true.
Trin nodded, and her gray bun bounced along with the movements of her head.
We always ate the meat straight off the bone of the animal. We never even once considered trying to cook it until Ben came around. And we found out quickly what we'd been missing when we started eating Ali's food. Say what you will about the dragonkin, but they can cook a wild boar like none other.
With that, the gray-haired Kunag woman snatched up a piece of the boar from the plate, popped it into her mouth, and swallowed it all in one bite. Her eyes seemed to roll back into her head as she experienced the flavorful goodness that went on inside her mouth. And then she licked her lips and grinned. Without another word, Trin snatched up a whole handful of the meat and began to shove chunks of it into her mouth like a chipmunk.
Wow. That good, huh?
Oh, very...
Trin acknowledged through a full mouth.
What is it?
I reached over, took a piece of the boar meat in my hand, and examined it. It was somewhat spongy to the touch, and I quickly realized one of the burnt ends was pure fat.
It's pork belly. Not as thick or fat as the pigs on my world, but that just means the meat will probably taste even better.
I tossed the morsel of meat into my mouth and was instantly assaulted by Holly's masterful mixture of flavors. The meat itself was tender, though a bit chewy, and I could taste the essence of smokiness from the fire it had been cooked on. The whole thing was coated with a thick layer of what I would have called barbecue sauce, flavored with pepper, a bit of mango, and something that tasted an awful lot like cinnamon or cloves. Either way, it was incredible, and I'd barely gotten one bite down before I went back for more. Our entire table devoured the pork belly without much fanfare, and soon we were all so stuffed we were leaning back in our chairs with our hands over our stomachs in misery. And that's when the servers came back with another dish in their hands.
Ready for the second course?
A kind-looking dragonkin woman asked.
Oh, there's another?
Awara gasped.
I thought that was the only part of the meal. No.
The woman proclaimed as she set down the second platter.
Who wants something sweet?
I was absolutely stuffed. But I couldn't resist having a bit of dessert, especially when it had been made by Holly. Then the dragonkin server pulled the lid from the platter to reveal a small mountain of textured white mounds of coconut. Are those macaroons? How did Holly figure out how to make macaroons?
She calls them coconut clumps.
The dragonkin woman shrugged.
All she used was diced coconut, the liquid inside the coconut, and a bit of this strange bean you started to make us harvest.
Vanilla, I nodded. She figured that out all on her own? Damn. I'm starting to think Holly might just be a culinary genius.
You're just thinking that now?
Gemma giggled as she rubbed at her swollen belly.
I've been seeing this for several moon cycles already.
Enough with the talking,
Lazan interjected as she reached for a handful of the macaroons.
The pregnant ladies need their fill since we're eating for two. That's not fair.
Trin cocked her head to the side.
I'm literally the only woman at this table who isn't pregnant.
Oh, that's not true,
Kandara interjected.
I'm not either.
You know, Ben could change that,
Lazan noted through a mouthful of macaroons.
I know.
Trin nodded very matter-of-factly.
The time simply hasn't been right yet. I haven't yet been on a long journey with the Draco Rex, which is where most of these impregnations seem to occur.
That's not true,
Gemma said.
Queen Nerissa never goes on any adventures either, and she's had two children.
The same with Talis,
Lazan added.
Never once has she left the island, and yet apparently she was the first woman to bear Ben a child.
I could feel my face growing red as the sexy, gray-haired Kunag woman's eyes turned to meet mine. I didn't know you were interested. I tried to play it cool as I could, though my heart was pounding inside my chest.
Please, Draco Rex,
Trin scoffed.
Who wouldn't be interested? Look at you with your kind, caring temperament and your incredible passion for protecting your people. That's not even getting into the physical attributes either. The muscles, the piercing eyes, and, from what I've been told, the large male organ that rests between your legs.
A rush of hot blood rushed into my cheeks, and I knew the comment had turned me beet red. Meanwhile, all of the women at the table gave each other smirks and knowing glances. They all knew from first-hand experience what was hanging between my legs, and each and every one of them could vouch for that claim.
Why don't you come with us out on our next journey?
Lazan suggested nonchalantly.
Maybe then you'd actually get to see Ben in action and you might find an opportunity. Oh, you know I can't do that.
Trin mused.
You and Nadir are both bound to bend through his seed and must stay close to him at all times. If all three of us were to leave the island, who would lead the rest of the Kunag while you were away? Jira? Malak? No.
I think I'd make a very fine leader.
Malak's voice scoffed from behind us. We all turned in the direction of the voice to see Ainsley, Malak, Mira, and Isla all headed our way. Malak had allowed her shaved gray hair to grow out ever so slightly in the last few weeks, though it was still cropped close enough to her head to give the same effect. On her body was the traditional Kunag dress, a furry bikini top that matched the primary color of their tails, and an equally furry bikini bottom that practically had no back at all. And the Kunag woman's black tail flicked back and forth like a pendulum in rhythm with her hips as she strode toward us. Next to her was Mira, the royal dragonkin warrior. The seashells in her long green hair flitted like wind chimes as she walked, and I could see every single curve of her body through the skimpy cream-colored outfit she wore. Her golden scales glistened under the light of the torchlight, and her face was animated with excitement, surely from the prospect of the new adventure that would come with leaving the island again. Then there was Isla, the bane of my children's existences. The tribal archivist and seamstress had a certain excitement in her one blue eye as she approached with the map scroll in her hands. Her silver scales were simply radiant, as was her forest green hair that she'd tied back into a single long ponytail that came down to her waist. Even with her damaged eye covered by a large white shark-eye shell, Isla looked stunning. Still, seeing the shell on Isla's eye was a harsh reminder of what we were dealing with. She'd lost it way back on one of my first adventures on this island, when she'd temporarily been captured by the orcs and was almost taken away on their ship. Thankfully, I was able to save her in time, but one of the orc bastards had slugged her in the eye so hard it was now blind. Seeing the delicate woman battered and broken shook me to my very core, and reminded me why I was doing all of this in the first place.
I heard you wanted to look over the map,
Isla announced as the five women arrived.
I gathered them as quickly as I could.
Ainsley sighed as she quickly sat down at the table, leaned back, and rested her hand on her pregnant belly. Thank you, Ainsley, I said, before I glanced over at my beautiful dragon queen, Nerissa. She had a peculiar look on her face as she watched Isla and the others stop at our table, but I calmed her worries with a quick nod. I would tell all of her this in due time, but I didn't want to take any of her attention away from our daughter. This was her special day, after all. We do need a map, I confirmed as I turned back to Isla. We need to find an island that is somewhat wet, hot, and preferably out of the reach of the orcs.
Unfortunately, there is no island out of the reach of the orcs,
Isla sighed.
At least, not any that would be on this map, since we stole it from one of their ships.
Well, then I'll settle for one that's just difficult to get to, or at least one they wouldn't just be casually sailing by.
Why go to all the trouble to avoid the orcs?
Owara questioned.
We've defeated them many times before.
Oh, I'm not worried about fighting them. If it comes to that, I'll kick their asses into next Tuesday. What I don't want is them finding our ship while we're away from it, and then stranding us on some faraway island we've never been to before. Plus, who knows if they have more wind dragons at their disposal? If they do, I definitely don't want to face off with one of those again without having at least one full-sized fire-breathing dragon at our side. Or at least until we know more about the wind dragons on our own.
It sounds like you've really thought this through,
Ainsley interjected. I have. I turned to her and gave her a firm nod. Batman, remember? Isla looked around the table for a place to set down the scroll, but didn't seem to find any. So we all quickly stood up, picked up our plates and tableware, and placed them onto the ground haphazardly. As soon as the table was clear, Isla unrolled the map, laid it down onto the wooden piece of furniture, and then flattened out any of the creases. Isla stroked her chin as she looked over the crudely drawn map. Now that I had it in front of me again, I noticed the chart had changed greatly since the first time I'd seen it. There were markings underneath the islands we'd already been to, both in the traditional dragonkin language as well as common.
The Kunag Island,
Lazan harumphed.
You could have called it something better than that, couldn't you?
That's what Ben kept referring to it as.
Isla shrugged.
So that's what I named it. We called Ainsley and Gemma's island the Neurolope Island as well.
But the volcano island is called the Isle of the Dragons.
Lazan continued to plead her case.
And the orc's island is called the Isle of Death.
Okay.
Isla arched her eyebrows like a schoolteacher lecturing a child.
I'm open to the idea. What did you call your home island?
Lazan's smile instantly faded, and her black eyes went wide. At the same time, the hair on her tail went straight on end, and its tip began to flicker like wild.
We just called it our home,
the multicolor-haired Kunag muttered, as her eyes averted to the ground.
To be fair, we didn't even know there were other islands around,
Trin spoke up.
For all we knew, home was the only thing that existed.
Precisely.
Isla smiled softly.
Should you come up with a better name, I'll happily change it on the map. For now, though, it's going to remain Kunag Island.
I don't mind ours,
Awara chuckled.
Mammoth Island has a very interesting ring to it.
Well, your island was interesting. It was literally full of giant versions of everything, so I figured it was an appropriate name. My eyes scoured the old hand-drawn map as I tried to find an island that would be ripe for wind dragon incubation. The giant island at the center of the map was surely the orc's home base, which meant everything around it was mapped out from this foundation. That meant, theoretically, any of the islands shown would be ones the orcs had visited at one point or another.
What about this small chain?
Mira suggested, as she pointed to the lower right corner of the map.
It would be far enough away, and we could always island hop if the orcs showed up.
That's not a bad plan,
Isla noted.
Though Ainsley claims you need a wet and warm area. Those islands would be right in the path of the chilling winds that come through these lands every few moon cycles. If anything, they would be cold and wet.
Isla used her finger to trace out the path of the assumed cold front she was referring to. And the one-eyed archivist was right. The islands Mira referred to were right in the chilly wind's path. What about this one? I asked, as I glanced up to the lower left of the map. I reached out to touch the drawing on the parchment, but then quickly pulled my finger away. It was still covered with the juices from the pork belly, so I wiped my grubby digit off on the tablecloth before I continued. When my finger touched the island I was talking about, Isla let out a huff of air from her nostrils.
I'm not sure that would be the wisest idea,
the silver-scaled woman warned.
Jonas has talked to me about this island before, and he's never had anything good to say about it.
What does he say? I asked with bated breath. If something on this island spooked Jonas, then surely the orcs would be spooked as well. Which meant it would be the perfect place for a wind dragon to store its most precious cargo.
He's never gone into much detail.
Isla shook her head.
Every time I ask, he changes the subject. The most I've ever gotten out of him since he returns from isolation is that we should stay away until we are more heavily armed.
Let me try to talk to Jonas, then. If I can find him, of course. I asked Nerissa where he was earlier, but she didn't know.
He told me he was going up into the mountains to practice the rebonding ceremony. I think he's very unsure of himself after his last failure.
He shouldn't be. It wasn't his fault we were attacked by wargs in the middle of a magical ceremony that required his full attention.
Hold on,
Gemma gasped.
Jonas told you what he was doing, but not your sister.
Mira looked at Gemma like she was crazy, and then a playful smile twisted up her lips.
Jonas has always been a bit of a rebel,
Mira snickered.
My father used to tell us stories about how he would make our former king frustrated because Jonas would just wander off into the forest without telling anybody. Apparently, he would sometimes be gone for days at a time, and the king would have to send a search party out into the wilderness to try and find him.
What does that have to do with him not telling Nerissa?
Gemma wondered. Mira just shrugged.
He tends to reject authority, and my sister is the highest authority in this land, other than Ben, of course. In his opinion, what the powers that be need to know about him is none of their business.
I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. Both of Jonas's granddaughters were very loyal, but also stoic and liked to keep to themselves. It must have been genetic, because Morella was about as anti-authority as you could get, and it wasn't just because she was a snarky teenage girl. Well, his king is going to have to send out a search party again, I mused, because he's coming with us to this island down here. The air around me went intense and silent, almost as if somebody had just sucked up all the calmness with a vacuum. The women looked at each other with wide eyes, and their movements were slow and cautious.
Dyko Rex,
Trin trailed off.
Shouldn't you speak with Jonas first?
I second that,
Malak noted.
If Jonas thinks this island is dangerous, then it would be wise to take his counsel on it first.
Oh, I'll take his counsel on it. But he can tell me all about the danger while we're on the boat, on the way there. I've already made my decision. That's the island we're going to investigate next.
Why, that one?
Gemma gulped.
Surely there's an island with the same sort of climate, but less danger involved. There almost certainly is.
Kandara nodded.
There's no need to rush into a situation like this, Draco Rex.
We're not rushing into it, I reassured my loyal subjects. This is a calculated choice. If the island is dangerous for us, then it will be even more dangerous for the orcs, because they're a bunch of reckless morons. They'll stay far away from the island if there's even the slightest hint that something there might wreck their shit. Which means if we're there, they'll stay far away from us.
So, in a way...
Malak pondered aloud.
By putting ourselves into danger, we would also be... getting ourselves out of danger?
Exactly. We're going to be in danger either way, so we might as well try out a new danger, as opposed to the one we already know. Right?
That doesn't make sense at all.
Ainsley shook her head as her mouth curled down into a frown.
Wouldn't it be better to face down the danger we could be more prepared for?
Not when we know there's no way in hell we're prepared to face down that danger, I reminded her. If we run into another large fleet of orc ships with a wind dragon, we're royally fucked. At least with whatever is on that island, we might actually stand a chance at overcoming it, and we might just find what we're looking for. To me, that's a risk I'm more than willing to take. Either way, it's my decision, and I'm sticking to it. There seemed to be a stunned silence around the table as the words left my mouth, and all of the women seemed to be afraid to say anything until Awara finally spoke.
Even if this island is as dangerous as Jonas says it is, I will follow you wherever you go, Draco Rex.
Please, call me Ben, I reminded Awara. And thank you. You are all some of the most loyal people I have ever met, and I appreciate that. But I know this is a very, very risky situation, and potentially a terrible idea. So I won't ask you to come along if you don't feel comfortable. I'm happy to have your loyalty, but I don't want you to feel like you have to say yes to every single thing I ask.
Don't be ridiculous, Ben.
Gemma shook her head.
If it's the decision you make, then it must be the right one.
Sweet-talking me won't change my mind, Gemma. I winked at the pregnant Nerolope. You're still not coming along. Gemma raised her eyebrows and made an innocent face.
I'd never dream of it.
Mm-hmm. I smirked, unconvinced. Anyways, we should try not to dwell on it too much tonight. I still need to figure out what sort of crew I want for this journey, and I know I'll definitely need Jonas. But he's probably not coming back any time tonight. So we may as well just sit back and enjoy the rest of the feast, and then worry about all that stuff in the morning. So, enjoyed the feast we did. As soon as Isla rolled up the crudely drawn map, we placed our utensils back onto the table and began to dive into the morsels once more. After that was done, we watched my beautiful Queen Nerissa as she switched over from her role as queen to the master of ceremonies. While we were eating, she stood up, gave a long, passionate speech about our new daughter, Mir. Then, once that was over, she had a group of Dragonkin healers come out and give our daughter the Dragonkin equivalent of a baptism inside a small tub full of salt water. Even though I was smitten and proud seeing all the attention my little girl was getting, my mind couldn't help but wander toward the journey ahead. It was going to be a difficult venture, and I wanted to make sure that no matter what happened, we all came out of it in one piece. However, now was the time for celebration. Tomorrow we'd pack up and begin our journey to the Deadly Island.